We're continuing our class on the Jewish home, and there's a rule in life. It's rare that you'll see a ball rolling uphill. It's common that you'll see a ball rolling down a hill, right? Well, that's the way life works. Downhill goes easy, natural. Doesn't require any work. Uphill, oh, that takes work, right? The same is true with many things that are worthwhile. Destruction comes easy. There's a saying in Hebrew that what it took 70 wise men to build, one fool can destroy. Destruction is easy. Creation, building, that takes a lot of thought and building. Now, the same is true within a relationship. Life has a way of challenging us. Life has a way of eating away at us. There are so many challenges. Sometimes it's parnasa. Sometimes it's dealing with that annoying neighbor. Sometimes it's dealing with the parents. Now, sometimes there are health issues. Meaning, there's never a vacuum. There are always things that will consume your time, consume your energies. If it's not one thing, it's another thing. There's never that free time. If you're waiting for life to give you a silver platter that says, here, have a break, free time, do whatever you want, enjoy, relax. It doesn't work that way. You have to create the time. And this is true as an individual. It's even more true as a couple. You have to create special times. We're approaching now the holidays. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. It's very common that people enter Rosh Hashanah and they're tired. And then shul becomes very tedious. What a long davening. Wish I were Moroccan. You know, the Moroccans, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur davening is just like a Shabbos davening. 2 hours, 2 hours plus, that's it. Boy, now you want to be Moroccan, right?
They don't have a lunch problem. They go fast,
bro. No singing?
They don't have all the additions we have. So, but that's not the point. You have something beautiful. Only beautiful things require time and patience. Imagine your 7-year-old daughter comes and says, Abba, I want to tell you what I learned today in school. You're walking in after a 36-hour shift in the hospital, and you're like, must be very interesting, darling. Talk to me tomorrow. Boom. You know that you're not going to discuss it with her tomorrow. You know that's not going to happen. Kids are not always eager to share with us what's going on in their lives, and when they're open to it, we better be listening, because tomorrow, when you'll have strength to talk to her, she might not be interested. You're going to come and ask her, what happened in school today? And she'll say, oh, nothing, and go on playing with her thing. You'll say, but you had something you wanted to tell me. And she'll say, yeah, it doesn't matter. And then you're like pulling teeth. You're not going to get anywhere. Comes a Rosh Hashanah, and it comes only once a year. It's very easy to enter Rosh Hashanah without strength. It's very easy to enter Rosh Hashanah without patience. It's very easy to enter Rosh Hashanah and not have meaning. You want to create something that takes investment. The same is true for Yom Kippur. The same is true for Sukkot. The same is true for Shabbos. Now, the holidays are called Mo'adim. Mo'ed means unification. The Jewish people are supposed to unify on the holidays. We're supposed to daven in a minyan. According to some commentaries, it's a biblical obligation to daven with a minyan. On Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot.
But every day? Isn't every day?
No.
No.
Not biblical, no.
Oh, okay.
But it's also a time when families are supposed to get together. The holidays are family time. A person belongs with his family on the holidays. And it's a time when one can build the relationships with one's spouse, with one's children, and no other time can compete with it. But it doesn't work unless you prepare for it. We had a student here who was engaged to be married. And then one of the regalim came along, and he said, I have to go out to Egypt because I have business I run, and it's an excellent season to make money. He was a specific type of tour guide out in Egypt. So he went out to Egypt, and the girl said, what do you mean? And when we're married, you're going to go out to Egypt also? So he said to her, when we're married, you're going to want bread to eat, right? If this is when I can make money, so I go to Egypt. And she says, Passover, we celebrate leaving Egypt. On Passover, we don't go to Egypt. And the guy didn't get it. She broke off the engagement. That was one of the impetuses for this class, because it suddenly dawned on me that as much as we're learning about the laws of the holiday, we're missing something about the spirit of the holiday. Part of the spirit of the holiday is that you belong home. I get a phone call from a student a few weeks ago. He says, they're offering me a job as a security guard, and I can't get any other job. Now, there's only one condition. They're asking me to work on Shabbos. So I said, excuse me, what are you talking about? Work on Shabbos? So he said to me, but it's security. Just like policemen work on Shabbos and soldiers have to be out on Shabbos. Isn't there room to find the leniency for a security guard? You don't even know what I'm securing. Maybe I'm at the nuclear plant in Dimona. And I said to him, I don't care if you're securing the Rosh HaMemshalah. You have a family. And your job is to be with your family on Shabbos. And the fact that you have to make money, so you're going to have to find a different solution. Certain things are not compromisable. You cannot compromise on your Shabbos. Then what type of family life are you leading? If you were single and you were in dire circumstances, so then we'd have to look into, maybe there were room to be lenient, like you're saying. Maybe it was something that were of national security. You're like an ambulance driver, so you have to work on Shabbos. Okay. Okay, but you're looking to make money, and I understand this is a convenient opportunity that came your way, but no, that's not compromisable. You have a family, and you have to appreciate that Shabbos and Yom Tov are times that must be set aside for building the family, building the connection with your wives. Whenever couples come and say they have issues, one of the first questions I ask them is, what does your Friday night look like? I'll never ask what your Friday afternoon looks like, because I know what it looks like. Go to any house, you'll hear the yelling, you'll hear the pressure. You're like, yeah, okay, I don't need to ask that. My question is, what happens when you come home from shul, and after you finish the meal, do you take time to sit together after you put the kids to bed? Do you sit down and discuss your week? Do you sit down? I suggest to young couples, get a game of Rummy Cup. Some people like cards. Don't play chess and checkers. I know the male tendency is to be competitive. You want to play Scrabble. Play something that you work together. Not that you're looking to win. Yeah.
No Monopoly.
What?
No Monopoly.
I don't know. Monopoly is so long and boring. It's like you can. I don't know if that you can call that competition. I don't know. But the idea is that it should be a long game, and a game where the focus is not about winning. The focus is about spending time together. Before there are kids, you could go out for a walk. If you're living in a place where you're comfortable leaving your kids, you might be able to go out for a walk afterwards when the kids are a little bit older. But Friday night, you finish the meal, you shouldn't be conking out. I know there are a lot of homes where by the end of the meal, the husband's sitting there like this with his head down snoring away, right? I don't know if you guys ever saw that, but I've seen it plenty of times. So when I got engaged, a very good friend of mine said to me, you're going to have to learn this skill. You're going to see. You're going to sit at the Shabbos table, and your wife is going to start talking to you about things that don't interest you the slightest. Here's what you got to do. She starts talking, you start nodding your head, and slowly let your eyes droop. And as you do this, eventually you'll learn the skill of starting to snore, and boom, she does the dishes, she puts the kids to bed, you get a good nap. What could be better? The guy was serious. And I was in shock. What do you mean? She had a hard week too. And you should offer that you should do the dishes Friday night, not her. Because many men aren't around all week to do the dishes.
So does this mean no more working on Yom Shishi? You've worked a hard week, you have to take a nap on Yom Shishi, that way you're not falling asleep during the cloud of the and at the meal?
So how should a person work it? I recommend that couples try to fit into their schedule an hour and a half nap Friday afternoon. I can tell you, depends on the person. There's something which I feel very strongly about, and I'm not allowed to say it because I'm the rabbi of the shul. So in shul, I always have to watch my mouth and not say it. But to you guys, I could tell it. Sometimes I feel like if a person is not going to have the Friday night with his wife and family because he's so tired, I'd rather he sleep through my speech. Let him fall asleep, because it's more important to me that when he comes home, he'll have that power nap and he'll be able to hold his head up and be with his wife and kids than that he hears my speech, even though my speech is very important. But, so I don't feel it's educational. I can't say it to the congregants. But sometimes I feel like saying, put your heads down. It's more important that when you get home, you have the koch to be good husbands. That's the key. And very often couples don't have the time the rest of the week. And Friday night is their time. So I've told people, when the rabbi speaks, I don't say it when I speak, because again, I don't think it's educational as a rabbi to tell my own congregants that. But I think it's a right thing that when if a person can't find the time to nap, if he cannot come into Friday night with strength, then he should put his head down and nap. Even if it's one of my congregants who are listening to this here. No, I'm serious. Your Friday night is the cherished time, which is, like we said, it's the time that you build. The rest of life is going to sap your strength whether you like it or not. Life does that. There are challenges. You have to go to PTA. You have to deal with teachers. You have to deal with the neighbor's kids that's trying to teach your kid how to light a match and play with a lighter. You have a million things to deal with. That's the way life is. You have to create the special moments. You have to create them by force. You have to insist that they'll be there. And that takes strength. Because if you're not going to work on it, then what's going to happen naturally is you're going to conk out on Friday night. You're going to have that job offer of $1 million guarding the nuclear power plant down in Dimona. And you're going to say, wait a second, it's mutter, Rabbi. You know, it's national security. To which I say, don't even come to me with the question.
You can't say the wife's a nurse, she has to be a shari
tzedek. I understand our circumstances, right. But we don't look for the circumstances. Just because the guy's out on a job, and I give a lot of weight to the importance of finding a job, but certain things should not be options. You don't give up on your whole family life for a job. Not when it's unnecessary. You tell me, look, I'm the top agent of the Mossad. We had a guy like that. He led a double life. You guys know about this? We should bring you once. Till today, they can't publicize his picture. Oh, he was a sheikh.
At the end, he said he wanted to do Jew. He was in here undercover.
No. There was a Jew, a very important Jew, who led a good kosher life here in Israel. And then he'd go and do his army service and disappear for weeks at a time. And he had a double life. He was a sheikh in some town somewhere. We won't say where. And over there, he used to preach anti-Israel hate, and it was all undercover. He had a wife or two up there. He was like an Arab sheik, and he was he was undercover. Until today, they won't publicize a picture of him. He got killed, and you're not allowed to. It's illegal to publicize a picture of him. He's the only soldier whose picture it's illegal to publicize post-mortem, because there are so many people whose lives are at risk. I mean, whatever. At any rate, so yeah, I understand. He was one person, you know. He had a pivotal role within the terrorist network. So I understand he had to lead a double life. He couldn't be home every Shabbos. But that's not what most people are faced with, you know. So we have to value the Yamim Tovim and the Shabbatot as times where we have to invest and create special moments. So people call up and say, Rabbi, is it a Jewish thing to celebrate a birthday? And I say, it's a Jewish thing to celebrate. You know, find reasons and celebrate. It's your wife's birthday. Don't come in and say, well, you know, a birthday only shows up in the Torah by Pharaoh as an Egyptian thing. I'm not really sure it's a Jewish thing. Leave it. There's a cause to celebrate. Celebrate. You want to celebrate your anniversary? Great. Celebrate your anniversary. It's a good kosher thing. We have to find and create special moments. I told you guys the story about the couple that would celebrate, or she would celebrate, every quarter of a year that passed, right? We discussed that last day. Okay. You have to create the special moments, and then those special moments shine on to the rest of the week. I recommend that couples set up a date night. That's not only Friday night when the couples are together. They try to take another night during the week where they limit their obligations, they shut their cell phones, and they take that time to build their relationship. You'll be surprised how quickly time can pass. No. And I say date night, I mean at 6 o'clock, they try to stop what they're doing and spend the night together. If you start at 9, 10 o'clock, you don't have strength anymore.
And
oh, so there were rabbis who used to take out an afternoon, who used to take out like a lunch. There were big rabbis here in Jerusalem that in the morning they were out, at night they were out, so they'd come home for lunch. They'd have an hour when once a week or twice a week they'd be with their wives and no one could disturb them during that lunch hour. Everyone knew they were off limits. Every couple has to work out their times. You know, you're saying his wife is a nurse, so they have to work out their schedule. One of the keys that we have to know is that it doesn't have to involve money. People think in order to have a date you have to go out. And I say no. What's wrong if you sit down on a Matzei Shabbos? You prepare the two of you two cups of tea and you just sit down the two of you together. You don't have to go and spend a fortune of money. When we were newlyweds, so we didn't even know what it meant to go out. Like, it wasn't in our concepts. Neither one of us grew up in families where you went out. So when we wanted to have a special time together, we'd buy fresh bread, take a can of tuna, slice a few vegetables, and go out to the park right here in Beit HaKerem. It's a 5-minute walk from the house. And you know what? You have fresh bread, you have fresh tuna, you have fresh vegetables. You sit down at a park, you have a very nice picnic. How long does it take you to prepare? 5 minutes? 10 minutes? And if we would want to splurge, we'd bring along ketchup and mayonnaise. Okay. I mean, saying that was like... But it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. You're going to eat supper anyways. But if you're going to go out, you're going to have time alone, and you go to a special setting, and again, that special setting could be 5 minutes away from the house. Suddenly you've created a date night. And again, time and life will sap your strengths naturally. Believe me, it happens, whether you like it or not. You want special moments, you have to create them. Yom Tov, Shabbos, Friday night, Matzei Shabbos. And aside from that, during the week, you should try to have a night which you designate. We also mentioned taking time to celebrate birthdays, anniversaries, etc. There's one more topic I wanted us to discuss tonight. And that is coming off of our discussion last week. Maybe we'll begin with a few stories, and then we'll go into the topic. Our story begins with a couple that have passed middle age. They're approaching retirement. And the husband wants to invest their life savings in a certain account. And he liquidates all his accounts into one account. And then he calls in the broker with whom he wants to invest their life savings. The wife is aware of the husband's intentions and decides that he's making a mistake She does not want him to invest with that brokerage house. So she goes into the other room and she calls the brokerage house she wants to invest with. And she asks them to come at exactly the time that he was planning on meeting with his brokerage house. She tells them, don't mention which brokerage house you're from, just take the check. And she calls the brokerage house which he had called and cancels the order. She says, it won't work for us that day, we don't want you guys to show up. So he's sitting in his room, he doesn't know what's going on, and a guy walks in, he's dressed in a suit and tie. Are you from the brokerage house? The guy says, yes. And he says, well, I'm so impressed with the work you guys do, I've decided I'm investing my life savings with you. He writes out a check, he gives it to the guy. The guy didn't even have to make a sales pitch, he's standing there stunned. He just, okay, he goes, fine. He says, thank you very much, sir. Takes the check, walks out, puts it in, and invests it. Now, a few hours pass. But by then, everything's been processed, and he can't undo it, and it's been locked in. And his whole future is locked into what this brokerage firm is going to do. And he discovers what his wife did. So he's sitting in the room, and he's already an old man. They've been together for a number of years. She's his only wife. And he suddenly discovers that their whole future, everything they have, is now banked in one direction. She didn't discuss it with him. She didn't have the decency to tell him what she was doing behind his back. She went, rearranged everything, and now his future is in that brokerage house's hands. It gets worse. The original brokerage house, which he was going to invest with, were good friends of his. But they were also mafiosos. So now, they're interested in what happened with all that money. And they start calling him. And he starts stuttering. Well, and they say, what do you mean, well? We were supposed to get that money from you. And you had said you were going to give us that money. And we don't exactly understand why you didn't give us that money. And now they start baring their fangs, something which he hadn't seen earlier. So on the one hand, he says to himself, oh, my wife was right. On the other hand, what's he going to do with these mafiosos? Let's pause our story for 1 second and shift screens. Okay, you guys hold that on pause. Now let's shift screens to another story, okay? Let's rewind the story. Let's start the story from scratch. I want to start the story, only plug in a few characters, okay? So our old man, his name is Isaac. The wife's name is Rebecca. Isaac wants to take his whole future, everything he's built up his whole life, and invest it in the son, Esav. Along comes Rebecca, calls the other brokerage house called Jacob, and says, you come in, we're not going to tell Dad anything. We're going to bump Esav out of the way. You're going to come in and take all of Dad's future, everything he's built his whole life. You're going to take those blessings. You're the future of Dad. In walks Yaakov, gets the blessings, walks out. A minute later, Esav walks in, and Yitzhak suddenly realizes, wait a second. Everything I built my whole life, my wife just undermined. I had a plan. This was supposed to go through Esav. And she called the other brokerage house. And not only that, but now that Esav realizes he's been bumped off by his twin brother, he starts showing his fangs. Esav says, excuse me? You said you're going to bless me? And suddenly, what's Yitzhak supposed to think? Okay? Same story, right? Just a little nuance of a difference. Maybe it's a little bit more important what Yitzchak was planning on investing than what this guy was planning on investing with the brokerage house. How is Yitzchak supposed to look Rebecca in the face an hour later? You know, you didn't talk to me. We've been bringing up these kids together. It is my whole life. It is my heritage from Avraham Avinu. It is the blessing of the land of Israel. It's the future and how I wanted our family to continue. So, in marriage, and we will see this throughout the Tanakh, we sometimes have to contend with situations where we're very displeased with the manner in which things were done. Meaning, if you would have spoken to me, Rebecca, maybe I would have come to that conclusion. And we never find in the Torah, or the Midrashim, to the best of my knowledge, that Yitzchak confronts Rivka and says, excuse me, why didn't you talk to me about it? So, if you look closely, you see that Yitzchak came to the realization, hey, she was right. But you also have to ask yourself, what's going on here? Can you deal, how can you deal with a situation where there wasn't open communication? You forced my hand. You didn't talk to me about it beforehand. Okay, let's pause the story. Now you guys put the two screens together. You understand where we came from, where we're going. Let's go on to the next story, okay? Following story. A man gets promoted. He's CEO of one of the most important banks in England. And they're having a celebration in his honor. And the Queen is there. And it's a very big deal that he's gotten this position. And they start dancing. And he dances in front of the Queen. And when he's dancing, he puts his whole heart into it. His wife walks out to the dance floor and says to him, Howard! Yeah? Aren't you embarrassed? Grown man. Dancing like that in front of the Queen. Like a little boy. Everyone was there to honor him. And now his wife comes out in front of everyone and makes him this little, right? Pause the screen. Let's go to the next screen. What are we talking about?
David.
Oh, mm-hmm. Right. Huh? David, King David. He's having the great celebration of bringing the Aron, God's Ark, up to the temple. And he's dancing with all his might, and out comes his wife, King Saul's daughter, and in front of everyone says, Manichbad Ayom Melech Yisrael, what an honorable thing today. The king of Israel just danced in front of everyone like one of the empty people here dancing. Boom, in front of everyone. King David dancing in front of the ark, and his wife comes out. And big tzaddik is that wife, by the way. Don't belittle her. They stay married. I told you the story about alternative medicine, right? Yeah, for sure. He remembers it. Okay. There was a wife who loved dabbling in alternative medicine, and her husband always said, honey, do me a favor. Before you give me any concoction, tell me about it, okay? So one day she's reading up on this fantastic panacea. It's going to cure everything. And she decides she's got to try it. But her husband, the cynic, she just, this time she's not going to tell him. He'll just feel much better. All his aches and pains will go away. His acne is going to pass. His balding head is going to sprout hair. Everything's going to be perfect. How could she risk losing this? She's just going to do it. So she puts together this concoction. She puts it into a soup. She covers up the flavor. And she brings him a bowl. And she says, honey, this is supper. She sits down, eating away from the soup. And he sits down and he's eating away from the soup. And as they're sitting there eating the soup, he tells her, you know, I feel a little strange. I'm feeling a little sick. What you put in the soup? And as he's saying this, they both start feeling faint. And they could barely make it to the phone. They dial 911. The ambulances come. They rush them off to the hospital. They pump out their stomachs. They sit there for 2 months in semi-consciousness. And after a long fight, the doctors can keep them alive. And finally, the day comes when they're ready to release them. And the doctors call them in and say, look, you have to understand what you did here. You basically caused yourself to have cardiac arrest and all your systems shut down. Now, we were able to resuscitate you. And your systems are relatively back in order, but it's only relative, meaning your kidneys, after shutting down, they didn't turn on right. And you just have to realize that chances are you're not going to outlive the age of 40. If hitherto you could have lived till 80 or 90, you're going to live till 40, something like that. There's only so much that we can do once we've resuscitated the kidneys, you know. You got another 10, 15, 20 years to live, but at 40 you can basically start writing your wills because you're not going to live much longer than that. So now they're riding home in the taxi, right? A very silent ride. And the husband has to think, what does he tell his wife after this? You know, what do you say? So he says to her, you know, I want to give you a nickname from now on. Let's pause our story, go to the other screen, and then we'll see what nickname he gives her, okay? Our story begins with Adam and Eve. Okay, so Eve gives Adam the forbidden fruit. She doesn't tell him what she's feeding him. She gives it to him and he eats it, and suddenly he says, you know, something feels weird. And then, boom, God comes in and says, you know, you ate the forbidden fruit. And Adam says, she fed me. And then, what does God say? You could have lived eternally. Now you're going to live a finite life. What does Adam say to Eve? What's the first sentence after the curse? What does Adam say? Vayikra ha'adam shem ishto chava. Adam named his wife Eve. What does that stand for? Ki hi hayata. Im kol chai, for she was the mother of all living creatures. So, what would we name Eve? What would you name her? Death, right? Mother of death. Yeah, no. What does Adam name her? Mother of life. Meaning, when we are faced with a real problem, we are still given the choice what we will focus on. Do I focus on the fact that she brought death to the world? Or do I focus on the fact that she brought life to the world? And that is a repeated choice we have. Couples sometimes have very challenging moments. Sometimes one is ill. Sometimes it's fertility. Sometimes one's parents are ill. Sometimes a spouse loses a job. Sometimes the kids are driving a spouse up the wall. Sometimes a spouse has insomnia. There are challenging moments. And in those challenging moments, sometimes what comes out is not the most complimentary. Sometimes we find ourselves facing a scenario where we feel like, that's not fair. I do not have to put up with this. There's no legitimacy for such behavior. This is dead wrong. How do I deal? He begged her. He said to her, do me a favor. If you're not going to have the time to seat belt the kids, don't leave the house. You take them in the car. Everyone has to be buckled. Everyone has to be in a car seat. You don't do it, please, don't go. I don't care if the kids are late to school. I don't care if they miss a doctor's appointment. Please do not leave without seat belting the kids. And time and again, he discovered that she didn't seat belt every kid. And then it happened. They were in a car accident, and one kid went flying through the windshield and was brain damaged for life. Now, he comes back and asks, can I live with this woman? I begged her. She's at fault. Is he wrong?
Maybe his approach.
Even if he's right, even if she was sucking her ice cream and looking at the magazine as she was pulling out the driveway, she had all the time in the world, she just didn't give it enough weight. Even if he were right, one of the things we see in Tanakh, Adam paid for his life, right? He paid for it with his life. And if you go through Tanakh, you'll see many other examples where there was a hefty price paid. She said to him, do me a favor. Don't bring me to neighborhoods where it's dangerous for me to walk around. Now that's a legitimate request a woman can make, right? She said, look, I understand you're a big muscle man, but I don't want to be in situations of danger. Please don't do it to me. And then he did it again. And she was abducted a second time. Her name is Sarah. Sarah Imenu. The first time Abraham said, she's my sister, she agreed. The second time she did not agree. So she finds herself in a situation, she's abducted, she's the one taken by Avimelech. And yet she's supposed to build married life with Avram after that, right? So yes, the story ended up fine. The police came to the scene and they chucked him off of her and he didn't end up defiling her, but he got pretty close. She did suffer. She did weep. And that's exactly what happens with Avimelech. So the angels come and they throw him off of her and she still has to live with Avram Avinu. And they have to build a house together. And that's what God wants. So as you look through Tanakh, you'll see that almost every marriage we know details about had complex moments. Moments where one side could look at the other side and say, wait, why do I have to put up with this? This isn't fair. This isn't right. This isn't legitimate. This isn't the treatment that any person can expect from a sane, fair individual. And you know what? We all err. We all have moments where we should have done better, and it's not right. But we can look at the moments when the other person does it, and then we start pulling out that card that's so dangerous, that card that says, this isn't right, and I am in the right. And then we think that legitimizes our reactions. So we always have to think back to Adam Arishon. What did Adam say? When Adam could have said, this isn't right, you killed me. Instead he said, we need to give you a new nickname. We have to focus on Kihi Aita Im Kol Chai. You're the mother of all of life. And in every relationship we have a choice what we'll focus on. It's a choice. It's very easy to focus on what's wrong. But if we focus on what's right, that's when we start building, that's when we can be happy in a marriage. Because every marriage has both components. Every marriage has serious issues. And every marriage has serious blessings. I'll tell you a true story just to show you how far it can go. On the condition that you won't react. Okay? Just listen to the story and absorb the idea. I'm not promoting this behavior, obviously. But I'm just saying this story was probably the most extreme story that I ever saw. And again, I'm not promoting any part of the story, but nonetheless, it shows us how far a person can go if they choose a certain vantage point. True story. A husband tried to kill his wife 3 times. And after the 3rd time, the police came and said, you know, enough. We're putting a restraining order. We're putting an end to this. And the wife said, you can't do that. So the police said, why not? What are we waiting for? And the wife said, you're seeing him now when he's upset. But you have no idea what a beautiful human being he is. So people standing on the side were like wondering, is she for real? So there were all kinds of theories that people wanted to promote, you know, the nature of an abused woman and all kinds of theories. So when she heard that, she sat down and wrote a whole essay, pages long, about what a beautiful person he is. And she said, we got to get him help. But we don't need a restraining order. And we don't need a divorce. What we need is the correct psychological, psychiatric care for this person. So, that shows you something. A person can decide to focus on one aspect. Again, I'm not promoting anything here. Nor am I saying anything other than that idea that if a person chooses to look at one side, than we see in Tanakh over and over again. It's possible.